And we're holding on page Yud Aleph in Sota, the first line of the wide lines, middle of Oisachov test. We learned yesterday about the parts of the story of Yehuda and Tamar. The last that we talked about that that are the simonim, the three things that Yehuda had given her as a pledge, and now she needed to use those to prove that or to ask Yehuda to admit that he's the father of her unborn children. That we said the Malach Samach Mem took them away, and then Gavriel brought them back, and the result was that eventually David was born from all of that because he's descended from Tamar. So now the Gemara continues. The pasuk says, "Vehisha." We said before, "He mutzes," which the Gemara had dashed in mutzes, meloshen motza, that now she found those three effects at the last moment. So now the pasuk continues, "Vehishocha chamiolamer." She sent a message to her father-in-law saying, "Leisha she'eva loya noichi hora." I'm pregnant by the man to whom these belong to. Now, why such a roundabout way? But tamalei mema. Why doesn't she say straight out, "These are your things," and it shows that I'm pregnant by you? The answer is Amr of Zutra Batrovia, Amr Rav, sort of Zutra Batrovia answers in the name of Rav, Amrila Amr of Honaba Bizna, Amr of Shimon Chasida, Amrila Amr of Yirchen, Meshum of Shimon Yechoi. This is one of those popular teachings like that came from several different Amiroyim. Noyach Loyla Odom Shiyatil Atma, Lasich Kivshan Eish, a person is better off throwing himself into a fiery furnace as Toma was about to be burnt in one, Val Yalvin Pnei Chaveda Barabim, rather than humiliate somebody in public, Malbin Pnei Chaveda, as the Gemara elsewhere expressed, literally means making his face white, because it causes the embarrassment, causes the blood to rush to his face, and then to drain out, so his face becomes pale. So rather than doing that, Barabim, Minolon Mitoma, we learn that from this story of Tomer, that if Yehuda doesn't admit and say, you know what, it's true, these are my things, then she's going to end up getting burnt, and that's worth it rather than humiliating him publicly and saying outright, you're the father. Which, as we learned yesterday, I mean, what he did was not technically against halacha. We said that he asked her a whole bunch of questions to establish that she is mutter to him, and as far as the fact that it was out of wedlock, as the Rambam says, such a thing is allowed before Matan Torah, and Mizrahi says maybe even in the Makadah, sure, but nevertheless, it was still beneath his dignity, and we see that Yehuda himself, in the story, when his friend Chira goes to find the woman and get back Yehuda's personal items and give her the goat, and he can't find her, because after all, you know, she was only there for that one purpose, and once she had relations with Yehuda, she doesn't need to sit there anymore, so now the guy comes back and tells Yehuda, and Yehuda says, you know what, Peniel of Uz, we're going to get embarrassed at this point, if it becomes public knowledge. So, how did she know what that this is Yehuda? She recognized him. How did she learn? I said, yeah, I mean, but how did she know? How did she know? I mean, it might be one of those kinds of things. You know, it's brought that before Matan Torah, in particular, many times great, great people such as Tamar could derive from their own seichel what the mitzvahs of the Torah are. We find, for example, it says by Avraham Avinu that his two kidneys, Kloyas Yoetzes, would advise him what to do. So you could have something similar by Tamar that she could feel instinctively what's the right thing to do. Later on, you have after the Torah is given, then you don't do that anymore, then you follow the Rotsan alien. But
he really had like a gut feeling.
Yeah, in a way, it's like a gut feeling almost, yeah. Tosfos actually brings up the point over here. It's not printed here in any act, but Tosfos in the Gemara brings up the point. Wait a minute, we say that there's three big things. You have Yehorek Val Yavra, but it's not a Gilad Ayes Shrichos Domim. According to this, we should be listing Malbin Pnei Chavera Barabim as well. So Tosfos gives the answer because the Gemara there, when it mentions the big three, is mentioning only things that it says Befedosh in the Pasuk. It doesn't say explicitly in the Pasuk not to be Malbin Pnei Chavera Barabim. We derive it from the fact that you haven't, in this week's parashah, you see all of Chet, but it doesn't say so it quite in so many words. A few other answers that Yishonim give, Rabbeinu Yonah gives an answer that it's considered, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, when it talks about the big three, that besides you have those things themselves, there's also what's called Abizrayu. You have like outgrowths of those three. Told us, sort of, yeah. So in Abizrayu, he says, well, very well, if the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that the problem with being Malvin Pnei Chaver Abraham, it's considered in a small way, like killing the person, because again, you're causing the blood to drain from his face, well, very well, then it's an Abizrayu of Shvichos Damim. So once we have that on the list, we don't need to list this separately. Then there are Rishonim who say that the Gemara doesn't literally mean that a person is required to be Moser Nefesh for it. After all, the Gemara is only using the word Noyach, not that he's required. So it means, in other words, you have the big three for which a person is required, and then you have something like this where a person is better off, but not the person can be Machmer on themselves, like Tamar did, but not that it's actually required up Yalacha. There is even an interesting point that's there's an interesting point brought from Mariel Diskin on this. He says that actually what she did was a very smart thing. First, she sent two different messengers. One, she sent a messenger to return the three things to Yehuda unconditionally without saying anything. And the other one telling him, you know, these three things that were just returned to you, you should know that I'm pregnant by the person to whom they belong to. So that way, like, even the messengers themselves are not going to put two and two together and realize that unless Yehuda himself publicly confesses, then nobody's going to know that he had anything to do with it. Yeah. So she continues, she says, Hakirna, she says, please recognize, or now recognize. So why that expression? Yehuda had used that same expression, Hakirna, recognize, please, when it comes to his father, when Yosef was sold, and the brothers have to make up a story, have to make up a cover story, what happened to him, and they dipped his ksonas, pass him in the blood of a goat, and they sent it to Yaakov, and they said, Hakirna, so now, Yehuda was made to have to go through the same kind of thing. He used that same expression, Hakir, when it came to his father and caused his father tsar, where they say, Hakir no aksonis bin chahiyim loy, please recognize if this is your son's coat or not. Bahakir bisru hu hakir no. Let me ask his son to stop stealing. So the sale of Yosef happened before this. So Mephoshim actually deal with the point. According to most Mephoshim, this part of the Torah is in chronological order. We know sometimes in Mukdam or Mochabat Torah, but according to Rashi mentions in those at the beginning of the story over there, that after Yosef was sold, the other brothers demoted Yehuda, and they said, you know what, it's all your fault. If you had told us to return him, we would have. So now, therefore, that's why he wandered off to Timnah over there, and the whole story develops. Mephoshim deal with the point in that case. It comes out that you have quite a bit that has to fit within 22 years, because you already have, Yehuda already has grandchildren from Tamar by the time they come to Mitzrayim. Chetzrin and Chomel, the sons of Peretz, are already listed among the 70 people who came to Mitzrayim. So it comes out that you have to have things happen fairly fast over there. There are, I think, some of the Mephoshim will explain on a pshat level that maybe not, and maybe Yehuda's marriage at least took place before Yosef's sale. But in any case, the part with Tamar over here, B'Pashtos, is sometime after. So in other words, Marshall teaches out that he used this to trick his father and cause his father tsar. So the same way she tricks him with his things, and he has the tsar of am I gonna tell the fact, and not even he has the tsar beforehand of trying to find her, Peniel Avuz. Like we said before, he's sending his friend to try and find her and get back his things. So he's also going through a bit of tsar. So it's all the same kind of thing. Marshall points out, by the way, you know, when you get down to it, it does mention over there all the brothers, they all dipped the coat in and shafted the goat and dipped the blood, the coat in the blood, etc. But Yehuda, being the leader of them, it's all attributed to him. After that, when he admitted, subcommittee, yeah, it became public knowledge that all of this had happened, yeah. In fact, the Gemara is going to bring soon an opinion that he remained married to her after that. So in that case, it certainly became public knowledge. Yeah. A couple of them are first to talk about over here about detailed reasons. In what way is it midah k'neged midah over here that he tells Yaakov Hakirna and he's told back Hakirna? But it all comes down to the same point. In other words, that basically he's being shown to realize what he did wrong, so that this is the whole point of midah k'neged midah, is that a person should realize what he did wrong or what he did right, as the case may be, and know to fix it up. So therefore, that's how it was done. Now, when she says the expression hakir na, another point of it is ein na el loshen bakasha. The word na is a loshen of pleading. Meaning, omrelo, she says to him, vakasha mimcha, hakir na pnei berecha, not just recognize these three things that I'm showing you. Recognize the presence of Hashem, meaning, in other words, nobody else might know the truth. There's no edim, and then nobody else can recognize necessarily that these are your items, but please recognize the presence of Hashem. Val talam encha enecha mimeni, don't hide your eyes from me, don't pretend like you don't know what's going on. Marashah brings from Rashi on Chumash that she tells him, don't cause many lives to be lost, because you have myself, you have my babies. Yeah.
She says It's
up to David HaMelech, up to Mashiach. Yeah, there's a whole thing's going on over here. Yeah, we talked about yesterday what the Medrash says, that a Malach basically forced Yehuda into it and told him, listen, this is where kings are going to come from. This is where great people are going to come from. So yeah, so now he's saying, please follow up on that and be willing to publicly admit and then suffer some humiliation and save our lives. Now the pasuk continues, Vayaku Yehuda, so Yehuda recognized, Vayomer, and he says, Tzodka mimeni. Now the simple meaning of Tzodka mimeni means she's more righteous than me, meaning that she was more correct in what she did than what I was doing. So in the simple sense, Mephoshim say it means basically like he's saying, you know, it's true, I didn't really do right by her by not allowing her to marry Shayla, and now instead she took matters into her own hands and she did the right thing after all. Each one in their own way, I guess. Tamar was risking her life for it, but Yehuda is risking his reputation. Sometimes that's a bigger thing. Yeah, we talked about before, actually. I talked about a few days ago that sometimes you can have a person might be willing to be killed rather than have to publicly admit that what they said until now was wrong. So yeah. We talked about a few days ago about the Soita, that here, you know, when they're giving her this whole speech and they're telling her, remember what Reuven did, remember what Yehuda did. What do you mean? Remember that if you drink this water and you're guilty, you're going to blow up and you're going to explode and everything. But the vote is that might not be enough motivation for her to actually admit. So therefore, we have to tell her that, listen, there were greater people than you who were willing to suffer a loss of reputation. So the Gemara is soon going to give a different explanation of the word Tzodka mimeni. But anyway, so now the Gemara says, Hainu de Amar Rav Chama or Rav Chonin by Bizna Amar Rav Shimon Chasidah. Yosef shekiddush Hashem Shemayim baSeser. Yosef performed a kiddush Hashem in secret when Potiphar's wife tried to get him, so he withstands her, but nobody is around. You even have when the climax came over there, and she's trying to grab a hold of him. The pasuk makes a point: Einish man shabais shom babois. Nobody's even there in the house to know what's going on. Afterwards, she starts making a whole hullabaloo about it. But anyway, so therefore, it was baSeser. Zocha vahisifaloi ois achas mishmo shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He had this chus because of that. That one name of Hashem, one letter of Hashem's name was added to his name. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Eidus b'Yehoisef Samoi. The only place where he's called Yehoisef. Why? Because that letter, Hey, of Hashem's name, was added to his name. So you have he has the Yud and the Vav from before. Now the Hey is being added in token of the fact that he made that Kiddush, Hashem. But it was in private, so therefore not a full name of Hashem, just the letter Hey. Later on in the Sefer, by the way, it mentions that when it talks about the whole story with Yosef and the 70 languages and all, that's what enabled him to learn all the 70 languages in one night, and therefore to become Pharaoh's prime minister, is by that power that he was given with that extra letter of Hashem's name that was added to his name. But he got all of that because he was Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. Yehuda Shekiddush Shem Shemayim B'Fahesya. Yehuda made a Kiddush Hashem in public by publicly admitting this whole matter with Tamar and saving her life. Zochav Nikra Kuloi Al Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now his source is that his entire name is on the name of Hashem. Namely, the name Yehuda includes in it all four letters, Yud Kei Vav Kei. You even have, by the way, in Halacha, you have a situation that it talks about in the Gemara, where imagine you have a sofer is supposed to write the name Yud Kei Vav Kei in a certain place. He mistakenly thinks he's supposed to write the name Yehuda. So he starts writing the name Yehuda, but he leaves out the Dalet. The result is he's written Yud Kei Vav Kei, and he didn't have the Kedusha of Hashem's name. What do you do about that? Can you overwrite it? Can't erase Hashem's name? What do you do? So the Gemara discusses the different opinions, what you do. But the point is, you see in Halacha as well, that Yehuda's name includes all four names of Hashem's name, all four letters of Hashem's name. Marsha points out, first of all, the reason why the Gemara is doushening like this is because when the pasuk says Vayaku Yehuda Vayom Tzod Kamimeni. Now, why does it have to say Yehuda? It doesn't have to mention the name at all. First of all, we know who else is the man in the story is Yehuda. Or if nothing else, you have the previous pasuk as Vehishochal Chamia. She sends a message to her father-in-law saying that I'm pregnant by this man. So why doesn't the pasuk say Vayaku Chamia? So the fact that it mentions the name Yehuda over here implies that there's something special, that he deserved this name because of this story. Now, the question is, he was named that many years earlier because Leah said, Hapam Oideh Hashem. Marsha explains, if that's all it was, then he would have been named Oideh. Why did the Edishta give Leia the idea to name him Yehuda was all shameless, that that in the future he's going to make a Kiddush, he's going to make a Kiddush Hashem in public, and he's going to deserve to have all four letters of Hashem's name in his name. Obviously, yes, that's the def. The Rambam defines a Kiddush Hashem. Tosuminissa is something else. That's to, you know, fire some in the nest. You need people. But listen, you know, listen. You see, for example, with the menorah on Hanukkah, you have to, you're supposed to be Tosuminissa. But if not, then you have Tosuminissa in your own household. But Kiddush Hashem means basically that a person has the ability to do an Aveira, and he controls and conquers his Yetzahara and doesn't do it, then that's a Kiddush Hashem. Even though there's no one around. Yeah. It's a greater Kiddush Hashem when it's for Fahesia, but
he said he's pointing. So he said over here, if there is Kiddush Hashem, because of that, he didn't do what Esther HaMalka did. Esther HaMalka, he's not Chalach HaZvot, he's not Hashem. Why is Esther HaMalka Hashem? That means telling all the people. That's exactly what he's asking.
Okay. So Hashem could also be with people not around you. So here, the Rambam summarizes, you know what, here, it says, negeh to this parasha, because we have the pasuk in our parasha, v'filaltes shemelet kecha, and we have the pasuk in ikdashti. So the Rambam describes it as follows, in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, a person is over midaitoi, without any onus, and any mitzvah amura b'Torah, b'shot nefesh, just, I don't care about it, and lahachis, then he's mechalos Hashem. So if he does it, Basarim Yisrael, then it's Chilul Hashem Berabim. And the same way that Rambam continues, a person holds back from an Avera or does a mitzvah, not because of any ulterior motive, there's no pacha, there's no yira, not for any covered, just because Hashem said so, like Yosef with Potiphar's wife, staying away from Potiphar's wife, Harezim Akadosh Hashem. So yeah, there you go then, Kiddush Hashem, and Chilul Hashem can be B'chadrei Chadorim as well, yeah.
The
Medrash actually says that Sarah was in Pharaoh's palace. She was kidnapped and taken there, and she withstood him, and that gave the koyach to all Jewish women throughout the generations to withstand such things. Yosef was by Potiphar's wife over there, and he withstood it, and that gave the koyach to all Jewish men for all future generations. Okay. Onward. So Zoch v'nikra kula shemal shemal shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kiven shehoida v'omot sod kemimani. And now when Yehuda admitted publicly and she says she's correct, it's from me, or she's more correct than me, whatever, however you explain the words exactly, yotza basko v'omra, so now basko came and announced, ake hiksalta tomer v'shnei b'neha min ur, you saved Tomer and her two unborn children from fire, ayecha, I swear by your life, that I'm going to save in your zchus three of your descendants from the fire. Where they also made a Kiddush Hashem, and they were also so that's the connection. In other words, that's just as Yehuda made a Kiddush Hashem by publicly admitting over here, and the saving was took place through Gavriel, because like we said yesterday in the Gemara, that he or she couldn't find the Simonim because the Samach Mem had taken them away, and then Gavriel brought them back to her. Gavriel was also the one who was Hashem's agent to save Hanani, Mishael, Azariah from the fire, as the Gemara tells us in Pesachim. He made the fire extra hot on the outside, and cool, he's a Malach of fire, so he cooled off the fire on the inside so that they could be comfortable in it. He made the fire extra hot on the outside so it burnt the goyim who threw them in, etc. So you have the same kind of thing, a Kiddush Hashem and Gavriel being involved, and therefore it's one in midah keneged midah of the other. Okay. Now, so Yehuda says sodka mimeni. Now, on the face of it, mimeni means it's from me, that it's true, she is pregnant from me. The question is mino yoda. How does he know? Now, the Gemara in Makkos, it was actually a few days ago in Daf Yomi, discusses this point as well. The Gemara mentions over there that there's three times that we find that a baskel came in and made an announcement, and this is one of them, and the Gemara says that the word sod kamimeni is actually a baskel, as the Gemara is going to say over here. The Gemara says, now you could say, maybe it wasn't a baskel, maybe it is in fact Yehuda himself saying mimeni, and as he's figuring, it works out time-wise, it works out, I know when I was with her, I know how long she's been pregnant, and therefore it works out, and therefore it makes sense that it's from me. Now, nevertheless, the Gemara starts over there by saying, and the Gemara over here is assuming, that there's no way that he could know 100% for sure. After all, as much as she was available to him, maybe she made herself available to somebody else as well. How would we know otherwise? So therefore, so the Gemara is saying that it was a baskel. Yotza baskel v'omra, mean many yotzu kvushim. From me came these hidden matters, meaning Hashem is saying, I orchestrated this whole thing in order that so she'd come out from it to Peretz and Malchus Beis David and all that. There's different girsois over here, actually. There's a girsa, mimcha yotzu kvushim. There's a different girsa that some rishonim have, that the baskel says it's from you, from Yehuda, that this secret matter has come out, that, yeah, I made it, that it should come out, that from you should come these descendants, these children of Tamar. The pasuk goes on, the pasuk goes on to say, v'lo yosach oid l'daita. He was not yosach anymore to know her. Now, Mephoshim on the pasuk explain that the word Yosef, sometimes you have a few times in Chumash, we have the expression v'lo Yosef, and it can mean two opposites. It can mean it didn't continue, or it can mean it didn't stop. You have the same kind of thing, for example, the Aseret HaDibros, in Parshas Ras Chanan, you have the expression kil godo v'lo Yosef, and you have actually two different opinions. Does it mean that it never stopped, that the voice of Hashem continues on for all time, or does it mean fakir, it never again happened, because Hashem never gave, there's only one Matan Torah ever in history. But over here, the Gemara is assuming that v'lo yosaf means that based on that same pasuk, that it means he didn't cease. So Amar Shmuel Sava, Chamor de Rav Shmuel Ba'ami, Meshmeder Rav Shmuel Ba'ami. So Shmuel Sava, the father-in-law of Rav Shmuel Ba'ami, says in the name of his son-in-law, Rav Shmuel Ba'ami, Kivin Shiyada, what it means is, once he knew her, and Rashi explains, we don't mean knew as in had relations, as in like V'adam Yada. Rather, it means once he knew that she was a Sadekas and that she did all this L'Shem Shemayim, then, Shuv like Pasak Mimena, then he didn't cease, he ended up marrying her and they stayed together for the rest of their lives. Marsha wonders, though, why Rashi has to understand it that way. The fact is, you could just as well understand it. Kivin Shiyada, once he had relations with her that one time, Shuv like Pasek, and he didn't cease having relations with her, and they continued to be married. Why Rashi is forced to explain that? It means Kivin Shiyada, that he knew that she's a Tzadik. That's okay, he says, Marsha says, I don't know why. Anyway, even Yaakov does point out that one point of it is, Yehuda is a melech, and as a melech, he's not going to marry any woman who was just with anybody. So therefore, it has to be that he knew that in fact she was not mezana with anybody else. Like we said before, mimeni, that he recognized, and the Baskel recognizes, that it's truly from him, and she was never with anybody else, and therefore there's no impediment to him marrying her. And we see that, says Rav Shmuel, Ksivach v'lo Yosef oid l'daita, or Ksivachim Kol Gadol v'lo Yosef. So just like the Kol Gadol v'lo Yosef, according to one way of explaining, means that the voice of Hashem never ceased and it continues. Adayim Azeh, the same way v'lo Yosef oid l'daita means he didn't stop knowing her and he didn't stop staying married and having relations with her. An interesting side point over here, by the way, that a couple of Mephoshim talk about is, you see over here, you have Shmuel Sava, the father-in-law of Rav Shmuel Ba'ami. Now, we know there's the famous Tzava of Rav Yehuda HaChassid, which has a bunch of recommendations of what to do and what not to do, and one of them is that a man should not marry a woman who has the same name, whose father has the same name as him. So, and if yeah, then one of them should add a name, Meisim B'cholyo, and that such things happen, and then either the Shver or the Edom adds a name. So here you have Shmuel Sava, the father-in-law of Shmuel Ba'ami, Mashma, maybe they weren't Machbet on that. On the other hand, an answer is given back to that. Maybe his name wasn't like this. We would usually understand Sava to mean the elder. So Shmuel Sava would mean the elder Shmuel. Maybe his actual name was Shmuel Sava. Well, then he has an extra name, so then in that case there's no issue in the first place.
Because you're going to say the verse of
the
Basayim.
What's that? Yeah.
The whole story about after 3 months, since Tishrei, something comes to the Ebershter. You got the Yehuda of the Ebershter. So Tomer and Kavosach, Tomer is Yidden.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 months, they forgot about you. After Tishrei, they were hopping the rocket. But then they forgot about you.
Mm-hmm.
So Tomer says, where is that? Hakerno, I'm busy with the Psila. I'm busy with the matte, the oil, the psilas of Chanuk, I am doing mitzvahs. No, so the Ebershter says, Tzot kol mimeni, she's right. I'm the problem. I didn't give her Shela Moshiach.
Nice. Wow. Wow. Where's that from? Basayin, you said? Psh. Nice. Wow.
Entertainment.
I've never heard of that word. Wow. Okay. Now, getting back to the Gemara continues, Piska, Avshalom Nisgoy Besarei V'cholo. We said that Avshalom was proud of his hair, which, as the Gemara is going to point out, had special, before we said in the Gemara that his hair was Me'in Dugma Shomaila, and the Gemara is going to talk about now the specialty of it, and he became too proud of it, and the result is that he was destroyed by it because he got hanged in a tree by his hair, as the Gemara is now going to tell the story. So now we're going to talk about more of the story of Avshalom. So Tana Rabbanan, Avshalom b'sa'orei moram. Where do we see that Avshalom rebelled because of his hair? Shenema, the pasuk says, Avshalom lahaya ish yofa b'chol Yisrael lahalamoid. There was nobody as handsome and praiseworthy among the Jewish people as Avshalom. And by the way, there was even an explanation from Tzadik HaKoyen that it means we're not just talking about physical beauty. The pasuk has no particular reason to praise that. It means Beruchnius also. He was a beautiful and great person. From the sole of his foot till the crown of his head, there was no mum in him. And the pasuk continues, whenever he would shave his head, and how often would he do that? He would shave every miketz yomim layomim, which the Gemara explains in Masechta Nazir, is once every 12 months, because the Gemara explains over there that Avshalom was what's called a Nazir Olam. He was a Nazir for his entire life, but in a way where he, every 12 months, it's considered like a separate Nazirus, he would cut his hair, bring his korbanos, and then begin a new 12-month term of Nazirus. So every so often when he would shave, ki chobed olav, when his hair got heavy, the gilchay, and then he would shave it, the shokal, a sa'ar roshay, he would weigh the hair of his head, masayim shkolim, some before him say he would weigh it in order to give tzedakah, an amount of gold or whatever equal to the weight of it. Anyway, masayim shkolim be'evan amelach, it would weigh 200 shekel according to the king's stone. And they would use stones for weights, like I have in our parasha, moizne tzedek, avne tzedek. So it would weigh 200 of those kinds of standard weight stones. What kind of stones are we talking about? Tana, we learned in a Braisa. Eben Shanshi Tveri of Anshi Tzipori, Shokun Ba. This is the kind of stone that the people in Tveri and Tzipori use for weight, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions in Erevin, that their weights were heavier than those in other places. So in other words, you would have, let's say, a stone that's supposed to be, let's say, a saw or something, or whatever the litra or whatever the equivalent weight is. And in Tzipori and in Tveria, they have larger size of that measurement, and they would use larger and heavier stones for that purpose. So in other words, not just 200 regular shkalim, but 200 of these extra heavy ones. Besides that, mind you, actually, there's a Gemara in Bechoris that says that Bechlal, any time in Chumash that it mentions Shkolim, it means what we think of as a shekel, a plain shekel, or a shekel HaKodesh, as the case may be, but any place that says, the Gemara says there, any place where it says in Nevi'im, where it says the word shekel, actually means littering, actually means a weight of approximately a pound, give or take. So in that case, Mosayim Shkolim would be heavy indeed.
Oh, wow.
So that's the point is that his hair, like we said before, was Me'en Dugma Shomayla. It's like supernaturally, supernatural growth over there, that after a year's growth of it, it would weigh that amount. So therefore, he was very proud of it. But that brought him to Gaiva, and that's what brought him to this whole thing of rebelling against David and trying to make himself king. So the Fichach Nitla B'Sairei, therefore he ended up getting hanged by his hair. Shenema, as the pasuk says, during the battle between Avshalom's and David's forces, Vayikore Avshalom lifnei avdei David, Avshalom happened to come in front of the servants of David. Avshalom ruichav al pered, Avshalom was riding on a mule. Vayovei pered tachasoyv ha'ela agdola, the mule went under the branches of a very large ela, an elm tree or something like that. Vayechzak roishav ba'ela, and his head got caught in the tree. So the Gemara is understanding, the Braisa is understanding, that it means not his head, you could understand. That it meant, let's say, that his neck maybe got caught on a fork of a branch or something, but the Braisa is explaining that, no, it means his hair got tangled in the branches. So now, well, if it's only his hair that's there, Shokol Safsira, he took out a sword, Bola Mifsike, he was about to chop off the hair and get free from the tree and get back on my animal and keep on going. Tonet ve Rabbi Shmuel, but we learn in a braise from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, but Usashah raw Gehenim shenivka mitachtav. He saw Gehenim split open underneath him. So in other words, if I chop off my head and I fall down, I'm not landing on the solid ground, I'm landing down in Gehenim. So therefore, in other words, I may as well stay put where I am, basically. Maharsha points out that the pasuk over there, after it mentions the part of the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting over here, that his hair got caught, the pasuk continues, "Va'pered ashtachtav over," the mule that had been underneath him went away. Now, why does the pasuk need to mention that point? The reason is, that's what brings us to this drasha over here. If the mule was still there, no problem. He'd chop off the hair, land back on his mule, and keep going. But because the mule was gone, and you only have the ground underneath him, and now it's not the ground anymore, now it's Gehenna open, then he realized, you know what, now I realize I'm in trouble. So the upshot of it was, as we learned in the Mishnah, as we learned in the Mishnah, then eventually Avshalom was found by David's soldiers, and they killed him. First, as the pasuk says, one of the soldiers found him and went and reported to Yoav. Yoav goes and takes three sticks or darts or something like that and sticks them into Avshalom, and he still survives that. Then 10 of his men go and then stick their spears into him, and that's the end of him. So now, the pasuk said, when they brought back the news to David, now David had actually given the psukim tell us that David had given instructions before the battle that nobody should harm Avshalom. First of all, and it's a natural thing that a father has for his son, but actually the Malbim has a very interesting explanation in all the psukim over there. He explains that Avshalom himself was not really out to kill David. Achitofel was. He explains over there the psukim that Achitofel really had it in for David and would have been glad to see David dead. Avshalom, he explains, was not really, it's more Avshalom wanted to be king. If that means the only way is that David's going to have to be killed, then fine, I accept that as a possibility, but I'd rather not if we can help it. Ideally, he thinks to himself, I'd rather if we can get David to abdicate and I'll be king. So therefore, so that for that reason, also David has Rachmanus on Avshalom. So now, eventually, they come and tell him the news that, in fact, Avshalom's been killed in the battle. So the pasuk says, Vayugaz HaMelech, the king trembled, or Vayugaz can mean he was angry, Vayav al Aliyas HaShar, he went up to the attic above the attic above the gate. V'vayev, and he was crying. V'choy omer v'lechto, and he was saying like this as he was walking. B'ni Avshalom, my son Avshalom. B'ni Avshalom. He's repeating again the B'ni. Mi yitin musi ani sachtecha. If only it could happen that I had died instead of you. Avshalom b'ni. So five times so far he said the word b'ni. Then a few psukim later, the pasuk continues, V'amelech lo'at esponav, the king wrapped up and covered his face in mourning, V'yizak ha'melech ko gadol, and he's crying and screaming in a loud voice, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni B'ni. So eight times in those psukim, he's saying the word B'ni. What's the significance of that? So the Gemara says, Ani t'manya zimni B'ni lama, Zayin da'askim izayin meduri Gehenim. The first seven of them was to shlep Avshalom out of the seven levels of Gehenim. So by saying B'ni each time, he's saying, he's my son. That's like a tefillah on his behalf. He's my son, and therefore my schus should help him. Also, Mephoshim point out that after all, David realizes that all of this is kind of his fault. A few prokim earlier, years earlier, the Navi Nassan had told him after the whole story of Bathsheba that you, David, are going to be punished in a number of ways, one of which is, Hinni mekim alacha ra mebeisecha. Hashem says, I'm going to cause that evil is going to come against you from your own family, and that was Avshalom rebelling against him. So David felt that he bears a certain degree of responsibility for how Avshalom turned out, and therefore this B'ni is also to be melamed z'chus on him, that it's not completely, he's not just such an out-and-out Rasha, there's a reason why he turned out this way. So seven gets him out of Gehenim. Idach, what about the eighth one? Ika de'amri dekod of reisha legabe gufe. One opinion is that it's caused, that his head got reattached to his body. Not reattached, but brought back together with his body so that they could be buried together. Now, Maharsha points out that, in other words, the idea would be that his head was distant from his body, so now at least his body can be buried together. Maharsha points out you don't really find in the psukim that his head was ever detached from his body in his first place. Again, he was hanging there by his hair, they stuck darts and spears into him. Where do you ever find that his head was chopped off? But Maharsha says, maybe the fact that we said, Vayechsek Rosh Ba'ela, maybe ultimately it means that at some point, actually, his head being caught over there on the branches, actually, they actually got separated. Although Mephoshim point out, since the pasuk says, Vayakus Yoya Vaynisuhu, they struck him and they killed him, the usual way of striking and killing involves beheading a person. Whatever the case, the one version is that it brought Avshalom's body back together, so it's not such a nevel in this way he could be buried properly. The ikadami da isim alma da osi. Others say that that eighth time saying v'ni brought Avshalom into olam haba. Now Tosfos brings up the point. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin a basic concept. Bro mezaki abba. A son can bring schos for his father. The Gemara gives an example over there. For example, that Yoshiyahu could bring schos to his father Omon, who was a tremendous rasha. Or, for example, Chizkiyahu could bring schus to his father Ochaz, same thing. But not the other way around. A father cannot bring schus to his son. Therefore, for example, Chizkiyahu's schusim don't save Menashe, to give an example. Or Yoshiyahu's don't save Yehoyakim. So how is it? And the Gemara gives the example over there. For example, Abraham can't save Yishmael. Yitzchak can't save Esav. So how is it that we're saying that David's schusim save Avshalom? So Tosfos gives a few reasons. First of all, we see that Avshalom got his punishment in this world, that he was killed with a missing Mishunah like that, so therefore now his father's tefillah can help with him. The Gemara actually mentions something similar about that by Yehoyakim over there. Yehoyakim was the worst Rasha of all the kings of Yehuda, and by rights you would think he should be listed among the ones who lost the Chelek on Abba, but the Gemara explains that not, because he ended up dying a missing Mishunah, and his skull was burnt long afterwards and so forth. The Gemara tells the whole story over there. So that's one reason. Second of all, Tosfos says, at least Avshalom didn't worship Avodah Zarah. The other Rishoyim that the Gemara is mentioning over there, sons of Rishoyim, who were sons of famous Tzaddikim, worshipped Avodah Zarah, Avshalom did not. Third of all, Tosfos says, you know what? It means that what the Gemara means over there is the covered of the father is not going to cause Hashem to mitigate the punishment of the son. But that's when there's no tefillah. Here we're talking about David is davening for Avshalom, so therefore his tefillah can help. This is brought lahalocha. You have Rahman al-Flan. A person loses a child, and they say Kaddish, and they daven, and they do things l'ilu nishmasam, based on this Tosfos is one reason why that can help. I abalim zaki bra, but with tefillah is different. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, by the way, points out a fascinating point. Here we're saying Avshalom wanted to be king and he didn't and he was killed, and we're going to talk about later that he thought he had sons, but they weren't worthy of succeeding him. But in the end, actually, the Pasuk mentions that Rechavam, the grandson of Shlomo, the grandson of David rather, married a woman, Macha Bas Avishalom, so her father or grandfather, whatever, was Avshalom, and the future kings of Yehuda descend from that marriage. So it comes out that after all, Avshalom has a schus, that the future kings of Beis David and eventually Mashiach do descend from him. When we go back to Eretz Yisrael by the Geula Hasida, that will be a complete going in as far as all, you know, we know you have Zman, Mokum, and Odom, Olam, Shon, and Nefesh, as otherwise phrased. So you're going to have, as far as Zman, and that's going to be right away, not like when the Jewish people first entered Eretz Yisrael under Yoshua's leadership. It took them 14 years to conquer and divide up Eretz Yisrael. Here it'll be an immediate thing. As far as Mokum, that we're going to have the extra three countries of Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni, unlike only the seven from before. And as far as Odom, that'll be all the Jewish people, because unlike by the entrance to Eretz Yisrael, you had the Dor HaMidbar who passed away in the Midbar and so forth. Now you're going to have that everybody, including those who come alive, by Tchias HaBeis, we're going to settle in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, you have the full completion of it as far as Olam and Shana and Nefesh. Continuing on Halachas of Rosh Chodesh. So you're allowed to do malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Women have a minig not to do malacha on it, and it's a minig hogur, and it's a proper minig, and they shouldn't be makel. The famous thing the Medrash says, because the women didn't participate in the Chet Ha'egel, so therefore, like the idea would be, it was supposed to be Rosh Chodesh should be a yomtiv for all the Jewish people. Instead, it was taken away with the 12 Rosh Chodeshim for the 12 Shvatim. Instead, it was taken away from the men and left only for the women. We do actually find, actually, in a number of places in Nevi'im, we find that in the times of Tanakh, everybody celebrated Rosh Chodesh as a day when they would be off work. You have in the story of Mocha Chodesh, the Torah of Mocha Chodesh, you have Yonasan says to David, he refers to Yom HaMaseh, which means, in other words, the day of work, as opposed to implying that Rosh Chodesh is not a day of work. You have here and there other scattered psukim that imply the same thing, but it was never an obligation, and in later times it became only a minhag of women. But there's a minhag kosher, and yeah.
Does it mean you treated like a
yontif
or like a
chol hamoed? Yeah, it seems more like a chol hamoed. We don't mean, for example, like not doing any of the 39 malachas. We mean more like a chol hamoed type of thing, right?